This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
Thank you all so much for coming tonight, and thank you so much to Slot. So this exhibition presents works that are culled from my research on intersections of radical left politics and artistic practice. And since 2001, I've been researching visual art, literature, and performance that are aligned with anti-capitalist, anti-colonial, and anti-imperialist social movements and ideologies, focusing especially on work in Argentina, Brazil, Mexico, and the Latino U.S. Much of this research is reflected in the book that I'm currently completing, which is titled Radical Politics Across the Arts of the Americas. My research and this exhibition are fundamentally about examining aesthetics as a potentially radicalizing force within contemporary political and social struggles, and thinking of aesthetic practices as offering the possibility for reconfiguring our perceptual interface with the world, and thus for constituting counter-hegemonic political imaginaries. So this exhibition also serves as a translocal cartography of what I'm calling guerrilla cultural warfare, charted across different sites of conflagration within the contemporary struggle against capitalism and its imperial and colonial modes of domination. So the exhibition maps a constellation of work whose local inscriptions are simultaneously part and parcel of transnational processes and movements. This is seen, for example, in the work from Argentina that's emerging from the 2001-2002 financial and political crisis, which is really a kind of a flashpoint in the global history of neoliberal crises and in the global movement against capitalism, as well as work that is articulated with the anti-colonial, anti-capitalist politics of the EZLN that's in the end of this gallery. The Pocha Research Society's work, which is aligned with anti-displacement organizing against gentrification in Los Angeles. Work behind me that addresses racist state violence in Brazil and the U.S. And in the front room, the Iconoclasistas mapping projects, which have emerged from long processes of collaborative research on the effects of neo-extractivism in South America. So I've brought all of these different collectives and artists together in part to argue that they are part of a contemporary anti-capitalist, anti-colonial cultural left. They're also part of a very specific generational formation of the left. They all start producing work in the 1990s in the context of deepening neoliberalization in their respective national contexts, in the wake of the Zapatista uprising and its global repercussions, and other flashpoints within the alter-globalization movement. All of their work articulates a critique of the transformations that are brought about through the processes of neoliberalization as it has occurred at various social scales, be these local, national, or transnational. But importantly, the social critiques their works make are enmeshed with the political practices and knowledges that are produced by anti-systemic movements that have protagonized resistance to neoliberalization and its effects. For this reason, these works really cannot be understood as isolated art objects or even as the sole creation of their authors who are credited here, as their meanings and their effects are realized in the social material processes that constitute their social life. And really one of the things that has drawn me to all of these different art practices is the fact that their social life is enmeshed with contemporary anti-systemic social movements. And as such, they really participate in the collective labor that movements carry out to transform social life and transform the ways that we understand it. I'm building on a large body of scholarship on social movements, as well as my own extensive interviews with cultural workers and activists, I understand movements as engaging in struggles over representations, epistemologies, the production of subjectivities, political narratives, memory, and modes of sociality. All of these struggles, of course, are inherently tied up with relations of power, and none of them can be separated from material concerns. Understanding social movements in this way helps to elucidate the ways that aesthetic practices can be immanent to this collective process. And when I talk about the social life of these works being enmeshed in movements, this includes the ways that many of them are produced and circulated within the counterpublics that movements convoke. And in some cases, the works themselves are elements in collaborative processes or in expressive systems, and as such are truly co-produced by the artists along with other activists, researchers, or organizers. So many of these works really attest to the ways the artists have taken up and transformed aesthetic forms, discourses, and tactics that have been produced by anti-authoritarian, anti-capitalist, and anti-colonial social movements. And in so doing, the artists are contributing to the movement's aesthetic repertoires, sometimes creating new kinds of archives of these movements. But they may also be working to expand and radicalize the movement's political horizons and strategies. For example, you can see this in the work from Argentina that's along this wall. A lot of this work is coming out of the human rights movement, but what really interests me about it is the way that it really radicalizes the human rights discourse, taking up questions of economic justice, really kind of reconfiguring the temporality within which the human rights struggle is traditionally understood. It's normally understood as being related to the period of dictatorship, and a lot of this work really builds on kind of the social condemnation that's been the movement has created about the dictatorship and uses that to talk about state violence and structural violence under the neoliberal democratic state. So that's kind of one of these examples of the work really bringing something, you know, in line with other radical tendencies that already exist in that movement, but giving a kind of aesthetic materialization to these more radical tendencies that might be a minor chord within the movement, but in their work it really becomes quite visible and legible in a different way. We also see this in the work of Fran Ehlich, which is in the back. It's the work on Raiders of the Lost Crown. It works in a kind of different way. He's an experimental media artist, but who's, in that case, he produced a very heterodox alternate reality game. His work is really profoundly influenced by the EZLN and Zapatismo and its critiques of the neocolonial Mexican state, its critiques of indigenismo. And in the case of his work, he's really translating that to the kind of metropolitan audience of cultural producers and researchers within which he moves. So given the way that this work is embedded in anti-systemic movements and articulated with their cultural politics, it also offers an important lens for considering aspects of these movements that tend to be obfuscated by the monological representations of them that so commonly circulate. And this is particularly important, I think, given that emergent counter-hegemonic political imaginaries and subjectivities are so swiftly effaced by state narratives and by representational frameworks fitted to the exigencies of state politics. One might think, for example, of the belittling of radical movements, the oversimplification of their politics, or the notion that if they do not immediately translate their activity into either revolutionary change or state reforms, or even express their politics in terms of demands to the state, that they have somehow then failed. In many cases, these ways of representing anti-systemic movements really participates in a counterinsurgent politics on an ideological plane. And we see the corporate media, as well as some versions of academic discourse, really playing an important role in this onslaught. So working against these types of discourses that would really work to flatten the potentiality of movements, these kind of aesthetic practices that emerge from movements can provide a different type of archive or repertoire in which we can discern in much more nuanced tones the various dimensions of anti-systemic struggles and the political imaginaries that are operative within them. This includes their internal heterogeneity and the ways that they participate in the production of new political subjectivities. I think it also entails their utopic dimensions and the alternative conceptions that they produce of things like justice, territory, history, or futurity. And we can see this, for example, in the work from Argentina that's really also producing a kind of visibilization of the possibility of a conception of justice that works beyond the state's mandates of what justice might mean, or the work in the front room on the Iconoclasts, which is operating with different conceptions of how territory can be understood beyond the kind of developmentalist narratives that are given to the understanding of territory right now. And then in the case of Fran Ehlich's work, there's an aspect, if you have a chance, it's a very text-heavy piece, but the end of the narrative that you'll see in the emails that are produced is really, I think, tapping into kind of certain utopic dimensions of Zapatismo and in kind of operating them on a speculative register to really think about what a future beyond Eurocolonial modernity might look like and what that might mean for really rethinking European culture as well. So this show also specifically examines the social critique and political imaginaries that have emerged in a really specific historical conjuncture, which can be generally described as a deepening of neoliberalization and its crises in different places in the Americas. Of course, the local and national ramifications of these processes are divergent, but I really want to emphasize that these are transnational processes and that the resistance to them should be understood as translocal and, in the case, I think, of all of these artists, as internationalist. So in thinking kind of across the different projects, I want to highlight a few of the critiques that this work is making, the kind of social critiques it's making that I think that are most salient across these different types of work. One of these is a really strong, is this critique of the liberal ideology that would represent the economy as autonomous of politics, such that the social reality that exists, that is given to us now, seems to be the only possible reality. And this is particularly important in the case of work, for example, that's kind of working against the narratives that would represent, for example, democratic politics as fundamentally different from anything that has happened under an authoritarian state, even if the kind of economic project is a continuation. That's very much the case in the work from Argentina. So this is related to the critique of representations of the state as a nonviolent actor, when in reality all of this work is in many ways pointing to the way that the class project of neoliberalization, like the machinations of capital, of course, fundamentally relies on state violence. We see this in the post-dictatorial Latin American context, where in discourses of transition have worked to represent the democratic state as post-violent, as having transcended a preceding stage of armed struggle and counter-revolutionary violence. And these narratives are very powerful in their ways that they try to delimit organized violence to authoritarian or neo-fascist regimes, separating this from their neoliberal successors, and therefore representing violence as part of an exceptional excess of illiberal regimes rather than an expression of liberal agency. So in my research, and in a lot of this work that we see here, challenges to this narrative come in the form of work that radicalizes human rights discourse to highlight the ways that the ruling class makes use of state violence, including state terrorism, for projects that can be understood as economic terrorism. And this work also brings into view forms of state-sanctioned class-based violence that are sanctioned by neoliberal and even populist regimes, which is far less visible than the recognized political violence of earlier decades. This has often become because it's exacted on subjects whose social marginalization or criminalization renders invisible or seemingly legitimate the violence that's acted upon them. And this is the case with those considered a surplus population that have been rendered redundant to national economies by neoliberal political economies and who are concomitantly seen as potential problems for governability. And it may also be because what is at stake are state-sanctioned forms of violence that are often not recognized as such or whose causes are obfuscated, like the violence of territorial displacement, debt, or ecological destruction. A lot of this work is also very much engaged in a critique of ongoing colonial and imperial processes of dispossession as being inherent to contemporary financialized and globalized regimes of accumulation. Here, the production of knowledge by indigenous movements and other subaltern territorial movements has been especially important for building an awareness of this and for bringing into view the colonial and capitalist epistemologies that legitimate ongoing territorial conquest and naturalize the objectification of nature and the treatment of the environment and non-human animals as resources. This we see very much in the work in the first room, as well as in Fran Illich's work, that's very much learning from the EZLN's critiques on this regard. And finally, among a lot of this work, there's a concern with illegible archives and erased histories, and with the politics of historical production, particularly as it works to foreclose radical traditions of critique and political practice and consign them in ideology to the past. So I would argue that expressive practices that are embedded in or aligned with radical social movements can bring into view counter-hegemonic political imaginaries that look beyond precisely these ideological conclosures, that aim to make desires for radical social transformation seem anachronistic or hopelessly idealistic. Related to this, much of this work in the show testifies to cultural producers' critical apprehension of the ways that cultural institutions, including those that are represented as beneficent or even as progressive, function as porticos for the naturalization of state narratives that would translate history into nature, essentially, We can see this, for example, in Fran Illich's critique of the colonial politics of European and Mexican museums, the Pocho Research Society's critique of official repositories of history and the systemic erasures that they produce, or in the case of some of the work of Etcetera, a critique of state narratives that are being forged by memory institutes dedicated to histories of state terror, even ones that have been put forward by progressive regimes. But beyond being forms of institutional critique that end up being parasitical upon these same institutions, the work here also attests to alternative ways of producing and disseminating culture and connecting to counterpublics that are convoked by their shared political alignments. This is one of the reasons why I talk about a lot of this work as a kind of guerrilla cultural warfare. It is largely extra-institutional or part of counter-institutional practices. Moreover, a lot of this work effaces the signal system through which it would be immediately apprehended as art or literature. This is the case, some of these artists, their work for years would appear on the politics page of the newspapers, never on the arts page. In the case of Fran's work, that piece involves a petition that I'm sure most people who read it never thought of it as a piece of literature. A lot of the people who work with the Iconoclastistas, I think it doesn't matter for plenty of their collaborators if that work is or is not art. So I think that the way that this work is effacing kind of its immediately legibility as art or as literature really operates as a kind of bulwark against the overcoding of its political use value by discourses and symbolic economies that are promulgated by cultural industries. In other words, I think these practices really recuperate art as a mode of production that is not principally oriented towards recognition by institutions and their discursive frameworks, and resists the abstraction and decontextualization that this usually entails. Instead, they are interested in aesthetics in its most capacious sense, which is about reconfiguring our perceptual interface with the world and articulating this capacity to collective processes of social transformation. Thank you.